This episode is made possible by Awin. Two-thirds of digital ad spend currently flows to the three big tech platforms, Google, Meta, and Amazon, but their auction-based ad models favor their own bottom line and inflate costs at a time when every single marketing dollar counts. Awin's affiliate partnerships platform offers a real alternative to big tech and puts you back in control of your ad spend. Want to find out how? Visit awin.com/emarketer to learn more.
So maybe they're thinking, maybe Gen Z and other consumers are thinking that this educational or informative content I see on social media could buy me some time at least before I need to see the doctor and maybe provide me with some of the information that I'm looking for.
Hey gang, it's Tuesday, August 15th. Lisa, Rajiv, and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast made possible by Awin. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by two people. Let's meet them. We start with our principal analyst covering everything digital health based out of Connecticut. It's Lisa Phillips.
Hey Marcus, how are you?
Hello there, miss. Good, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Very nice, very nice. And we're also joined by one of our senior analysts on that very digital health team based out of New Jersey. We call him Rajiv Leventhal.
Hey, Marcus, how are you?
Hey, fella. Very well, sir. How are we doing?
Good.
Very nice. Today's fact, humans share 60% of their DNA with bananas. That explains a lot. So most folks have probably heard that humans share close to 99% of their DNA with chimpanzees, but we are also 60% genetically similar to chickens, bananas, and fruit flies. You'll be happy to know. And this is noted in a article on Pfizer.com. This is depressing.
You'd think they'd have something better to do.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe not the most helpful research. For self-esteem, at least, of humans. 60% bananas. What's worse, to be compared to a chicken, a banana, or a fruit fly? Fruit flies are the worst.
Fruit flies, I think.
Yeah.
I think it has the most negative connotation, I would say.
True. They're the most annoying.
That's true. At least the other two are tasty. All right, today's real topic, Gen Z's take on healthcare. In today's episode, First in the Lead, we'll cover Gen Z's relationship with healthcare. Then, for another news, we'll discuss Amazon clinic video visits and how connected fitness is getting on post-pandemic. But we start with the lead, and we're talking about young people and their relationship with healthcare. Rajiv, you recently put out some research on Gen Z and healthcare. First of all, Gen Z, roughly know which ages we're counting, 12 to 26?
Yes. That's yeah. Right. And for the purposes of the report, it's mostly adult Gen Z, so 18 to 26. But okay. Yes, officially, it would be 12 to 26 as of this year.
Got it. Okay. So you note at the start of your report, Gen Z's healthcare journeys are just beginning. Explain what that looks like, please.
Yeah. So, based on their age, of course, they have had most of their healthcare decisions made for them in the past, whether it's parents picking out their pediatricians or colleges, having a doctor on campus. If you go to a college campus that you don't really have much choice with. And of course, the U.S. healthcare system doesn't allow for a lot of choice to begin with. But in terms of the products and services and care that you can choose from, Gen Z is just starting to make those decisions on their own, right? They're moving from their parents' health plans to their own, which means increased spending power and being more responsible for a lot of things, choosing doctors, comparing prices for services, booking appointments. And it's really an opportunity for providers, healthcare providers and healthcare brands to build that trust from the ground floor up.
So adults can, these parents can keep their kids on their own healthcare plans up until the age of 26?
Yes.
Okay. So the very oldest Gen Z people are starting to come off of those plans that they've been on from their parents.
This year, yeah.
Okay, this year. Lisa, when you think about Gen Z and their relationship with healthcare and these journeys just beginning, what comes to mind for you?
I recall having to learn the difference between a premium and a deductible, and then how mad I got when I found out I was going to be paying a healthcare premium and yet still paying a deductible.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling there's going to be an awful lot of consternation amongst these young adults.
Yeah. Health literacy, healthcare literacy could definitely be an important thing for anyone, but particularly people at the start of their healthcare journeys in the US. The one thing that stood out to me, Rajiv, from your research is that cost is a big deal. Two data points to back that up. 2 in 3 Gen Z people were living paycheck to paycheck. 2 in 3, according to a March survey from Lending Club and Payments.com. And then a second point you make, nearly 40% of the 18 to 24-year-olds, so most of the adult Gen Zers in the US, 40% skipped out on seeing a doctor in the past year due to cost, according to a March 2023 Civic Science survey.
Yeah, I mean, just think about it. If you're young and either in college or just out of college, you probably don't have a lot of money and you certainly have little to no savings, right, for the most part. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you might skip out on is any sort of non-urgent healthcare costs. So that's leading to the stat that that's one of the reasons why care is being either deferred or just skipped altogether, unless it's an absolute necessity, just because it's unaffordable for some of these patients.
So I've seen young people's relationships between healthcare and social media come up in other research that you've written, whether that was on millennials we talked about last health episode last month, or other reports that you've worked on as well. But in this one, you really do dive into that concept, but particularly with Gen Z people. And so you write that with more time on their hands at home during the pandemic, many Gen Zers developed closer ties with health-related content creators and influencers, saying thus, social media now serves as an entry point into the healthcare system. But to you, Rajiv, you had a bunch in here. What stat best supports this trend?
I would say it's that when seeking information on treatment for a condition, so many Gen Zers go to YouTube and TikTok. I think it was 44% to YouTube, 33% to TikTok before visiting a doctor.
Yeah.
And that's from a Charity RX survey from late last year. And just to take a step back, Marcus, you noted how often that, you know, they're on social media to begin with. These are digital natives in its truest sense. And then the pandemic happened, and now they're on devices and online even more. There was a door opening for them to connect more with influencers. Some of these influencers are professionals and experts, and some are not. So that's the pretty scary part. But I don't know if it made this report, but another stat from that survey showed that the top reason why young consumers are going to these social media channels before a doctor is access. So, for example, YouTube and TikTok, of course, cannot replace a doctor's visit, but accessing a doctor for, you know, so let's say you have a new issue, it can be really challenging for some people, whether it's proximity or cost or lack of available appointments. So maybe they're thinking, maybe Gen Z and other consumers are thinking that this educational or informative content I see on social media could buy me some time at least before I need to see the doctor and maybe provide me with some of the information that I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. Although I have to say, it could send them to the doctor too.
Yes.
There's something on TikTok going around. I just saw NBC News reported on it that doctors are saying, don't put castor oil in your eyes, as seems to be some things going around on TikTok.
It's pretty important.
People are claiming,
yeah.
I mean, you could hurt yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's Rajiv, the key word there in what you said was first. Where do folks go first for health information? And you mentioned YouTube and TikTok, a decent share of Gen Z folks going there first before visiting a doctor. There are a lot of folks who just go to social media platforms, as you know, all the time or often to look up specific healthcare information via different searches, hashtags, things like that. Half of Gen Z people do that. But this wasn't first, this was in general. That's compared to, so half of Gen Z people doing that, that's compared to, so 50%, just 1 in 10 boomers. So 5 in 10 young people, 1 in 10 boomers using social media for health specific reasons. Most people going to Instagram and YouTube, over 50%, then Facebook and TikTok, over 40%.
And some of them are also going a step further in self-diagnosing. I think that was in the report as well. And, you know, they're reading and seeing and hearing this information, and they think that they have enough knowledge now to say, I have this condition, or, you know, I am diagnosed with depression or anxiety. And if they're taking that information to arm themselves, you know, with knowledge as they head to the doctor, that's not the worst thing. But if they don't supplement that online experience with a doctor's visit, that's when it can get pretty scary and dangerous.
And that's a lot of people. So let's go to the number. So 30% of US Gen Z folks have used social media to diagnose health conditions like depression or anxiety, the largest share among all generations. That was according to a June Tebra survey. But half of Gen Zers, half who self-diagnosed a medical condition online, also got an opinion from a healthcare professional. That means a lot didn't. That means a lot diagnosed themselves online and just moved on with their lives. And I said this on, I think, one of the, maybe it was the millennials episode and healthcare. There's a big difference between knowledge and expertise. So just because you know something doesn't make you an expert in it or help you know necessarily what is the best course of action, even if there are a list of courses of action that you can read, knowing which one should come next. It isn't something that the average person can just glean from internet research. Let's move on to healthcare experiences in general. Lisa, what to you do Gen Zers want from their healthcare experience?
Ease, I would think, judging from their interest in YouTube and TikTok and so on, they want to be engaging and entertaining in some way, perhaps. But I think that they also expect a level of expertise they don't have. You know, for the ones that are really seeking a diagnosis, they will go to a doctor. I was a little taken aback by, well, Rajiv mentioned in his report that one of the reasons they'll skip out on getting healthcare is embarrassment over something. And so I would think that using some TikTok or, you know, YouTube video, do a cat or dog meme about acne or something. I mean, just try to make things a little more relatable to this young audience that it really seems to like that kind of content.
And building on that a little bit from the trust and maybe embarrassment, what struck me most when doing research for this report about this specific question, what Gen Z wants from their healthcare experience, was I didn't realize how diverse this generation is in terms of racially diverse, ethnically diverse, culturally, gender diverse. And those who are in, you know, a quote unquote marginalized group want to be seen and heard by providers and healthcare brands who either share that identity directly or who at least have experience in treating patients who have unique needs. And if you, you know, just look at some of the stats in the report about how many Gen Z patients, you know, identify as non-white or non-heterosexual, you know, that's really important as you're looking to build trust with them.
Yeah. So one of the things that jumped out to me was we talk about young people and how digitally native they are, how they want everything to be on their smartphones. But you point out, Rajiv, that many Gen Zers actually don't want all digital all the time, and that speaking with their provider in person is a preferred choice for 62% of adult Gen Zers, you write, as according to an Able Springbank study. That 62% who want the in-person experience first as their preferred choice, 62% is compared to 29% who preferred texting with their doc, 20% who favored video appointments, and 20% who said web or mobile apps. Rajiv, let's end with this question. How can health marketers connect with these younger people? It's a question that you answer in the final section of your report.
Yeah, I think one key is, I guess, from a social media standpoint, you know, capture their attention on the channels that they engage with the most. Lisa mentioned what you can do to, you know, sort of remove some of the either stigmas or barriers around how they feel in terms of trust and, you know, why they might be embarrassed. But also, you know, to that point, realizing that conventional healthcare won't work for this group and adapt your services accordingly. You know, we saw a couple of digital health companies roll out service lines particularly dedicated to the needs of Gen Z patients. And they're doing that because they know that this is, you know, an overlooked group at times, but, you know, they have unique healthcare needs. And, you know, it's an opportunity to establish that you really care about this group of consumers.
Lisa, one of the charts that jumped out to me was one that says that US adults who have switched, the share of US adults who have switched primary care providers, so how many have switched primary care providers? This was from our survey, US Digital Health Survey from last year, from the end of last year. And whilst 12% of boomers had switched, 16% of Gen X, 29% of millennials, nearly double that 29%, close to 60% of Gen Z folks had switched. And so there is this conversation around how Gen Z have less loyalty to brands, maybe higher expectations is another way of putting it. Maybe they just have access to more research. And so it's easy for them to see what else is out there. But this is a generation where marketers are going to have a hard time not only contacting this group, but keeping them because they do have options.
Exactly. They do have options. But I also wonder, we didn't ask this, is like, was this because you were using a telehealth service and every time you dial in, you get a different doctor? I don't know.
The why.
We didn't ask them if they intentionally switched or right. if they were switched.
Right. Good point. Good point. That's a very good point.
Sometimes that happens, you know.
Yeah.
And if they go to a retail health clinic, yeah, they see one practitioner or, you know, another. Or they call up for an appointment. This happens to boomers too. You call up and, well, that doctor's not available that day. But if you really need to see somebody, you get so-and-so. So I'd say that, yes, and maybe to the point Rajiv made that they're getting on their own insurance, they may have to leave the doctor that they used under their parents' insurance.
Very good point. Yeah. Did you switch? Did you have to switch? Why are you switched? There's lots of reasons why they could have switched.
Who's in network is probably the right question to ask there, because that's going to drive a lot of decisions.
It's another term they're going to have to learn is in network versus out of network.
Wait, I can't just choose any doctor?
Yeah. No, you cannot. That's what we've got time for the lead time for the halftime report. Rajiv, I'll start to you. What to you is most worth repeating from the first half?
Gen Z is getting older. That's a hot take, right? Everybody's getting older.
No. What?
They're starting to make their own decisions. As we said, you're going to have increased spending power. They're going to be on their own insurance plans. They're going to start paying for care instead of having parents or guardians pay for care. And it's just, again, a real opportunity for providers and marketers to, you know, maybe build a long-lasting, fruitful relationship and get it on the ground floor, because now's your time.
Mm-hmm. You said they're getting older, and we kind of laughed about it. But you're right. There's about to be a wave of folks who are entering this very crucial 26 and older category of people who are going to be.
I hate when I hear that. It's funny that I said that. Everybody gets older. No. Find me someone who's getting younger.
What makes me mad is when they say, you know, the older generation, people are getting older, you know, swiftly, rapidly aging. That's it. I hate that term, rapidly aging.
Faster
no more than anyone
else. Hello. Somehow, yeah. Although I think people who live in New York are aging faster than everybody else as well. But this group of people are aging into that 26 and older category of people who are going to be coming off their parents' health insurance and looking for their own flavor. Lisa, what to you is most worth repeating from the first half?
I think actually it was starting with digital. But through that, to the point of diversity, you could advertise, you know, in certain channels that you are, you know, gay friendly, you're gender neutral in your practice, but also prices. Cost is big for this generation if they can see that they can get a price. I mean, that's why maybe a lot of them use telehealth, because the price is right there.
Rajiv's full report is called Gen Z's Take on Healthcare: How Can Providers and Marketers Adapt to This Digitally Native Cohort? You can head to insiderintelligence.com to get access to the full thing, or click the show notes below to get there too. That's all we've got time for the first half. Time for the second. Today in other news, Amazon Clinic expands to include video visits, and how's connected fitness getting on post-pandemic? Story one. Lisa, in a recent piece, you wrote that Amazon has expanded its Amazon Clinic telehealth services to include video visits in all 50 US states and DC. You explained that the service launched last November with text-only messaging covering 30-plus common medical conditions. It's now in 34 states, but is expanding to all 50. Folks can access Amazon Clinic through the Amazon site or app. But Rajiv, to you, the most important sentence from Lisa's article is what and why?
Well, it's that Amazon is becoming a much bigger direct-to-consumer healthcare player. It's now expanding its services for Amazon Clinic, as you mentioned, video and text-based healthcare services. It's got Amazon Pharmacy. It rolled out a discounted Rx pass for generic medications. So it's really playing to the consumer and the consumer's, you know, healthcare needs. But it's important to keep in mind a few caveats. This service is mostly for patients who have minor issues and those without insurance, since the clinic doesn't take it. And then Lisa brought up in her piece, will the everyday consumer want to turn to Amazon for, you know, their healthcare needs? That's very much still a question. They've got a lot of trust concerns with big tech in general, and that's outside of healthcare. So we will see.
Yeah, one point from me in the piece noting, Lisa, you noted the number of U.S. telehealth users, over 100 million U.S. telehealth users in 2023. That's about 40% of the adult population. So a lot of folks. Story two, Lisa, you also recently wrote a piece about connected fitness, looking at how connected fitness has hit a post-pandemic slump. You pointed to our forecasts that suggest 1 million Americans will stop being connected fitness users this year, as the total falls to 40 million. That number will keep falling slowly. Connected fitness users are, of course, folks who use interactive fitness platforms like Peloton or iFit. But Lisa, to you, the most important sentence in your article on connected fitness and how it's getting on post-pandemic is what and why?
You took it from me. I'm saying connected fitness users are falling off the wagon is really just the whole thing. Yeah, we're seeing that. We had to update our estimates because to adjust them down.
Yep.
We had thought that this pandemic boom that was created when people had to stay home, Peloton bikes were the rage. And now we're expecting like 800,000 people will leave Peloton or leave connected fitness services. I mean, Lululemon bought Mirror, which is a connected fitness tool and subscription service, and now they're trying to sell them.
Yeah.
Only 3 years later. So, yeah, people are going back to the gym, or they're just trying new routines, or they're just not exercising at all anymore.
Yeah, we did have our forecast, as you mentioned, kind of steady, slow staircase growth up in terms of connected fitness users. And now we've revised that to a steady staircase going down in terms of those folks. That's all we've got time for this episode. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Lisa.
Thank you, Marcus. Good to see you.
You too. Thank you, of course, to Rajiv.
Thanks, Marcus.
Yes, sir. And thank you to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, and Stuart, who runs the team. Thanks to everyone for listening in to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Awin. You can tune in tomorrow, if you like, to hang out with Sarah on the Reimagining Retail show, where she'll be speaking with Insider Intelligence Senior Analyst Blake Droesch and Senior Director of Content Becky Schilling, all about grocery.